The HoloLens 2, only available for businesses, is being discontinued, marking Microsoft's exit from the mixed reality business. Plus, Ubisoft is actually considering selling itself after an activist investor asked them to. Tonight is October 6th, 2024, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is Edwin Akeriper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O'Kay says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
See, that's the thing. Does it count in the drinking game if I reference sports before I play the intro? Does it count? I don't know. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Not a Sports Edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on this Sunday night, welcome. We do try to tape the show live each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show. I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night, but this is a podcast. I know a podcast gets posted a little late. I apologize for that, but trust me, it's still good stuff. We do have a Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord. That is where you can interact with us through the week and post stories that you want us to talk about. And all of the stories we're talking about tonight came from our Discord server over at vognetwork.com/discord. OG Happy Dude says, intelligent comments from the internet. I know that's the hard part. I try. But sometimes some people make it a little difficult, but we try. We do our best, and most people here are fine, and they're good, and they're intelligent. And then there's Breakman, who's probably not here, so I really can't make fun of him while he's not here. But anyway, let's talk about some news. Before I do get to that, I want to mention I did mention about Hurricane Helene coming through last week, a little earlier than last week. It's pretty bad. A lot of the things that have happened since. I actually didn't get to hear from certain people that I didn't know I hadn't heard from until they finally got service. And there's a lot of recovery going on in this area. The hurricane veered a little bit east of me, so we just got a whole bunch of rain and wind here. But they're not people. People who have done hurricane relief before aren't used to doing it in the mountains, which need the most. The most help right now in like the North Georgia, Western North Carolina, that area in Appalachian Mountains. And those places got hit pretty hard, and they were not prepared because hurricanes typically don't go there. So if you can donate and help, there are boots on the ground, no matter what people might try to say. There is a lot of stuff going on there. If you want to watch some gaming, and go for and help that way and support some gaming initiatives. Games Done Quick is doing an impromptu online marathon called Direct Relief Done Quick. It is going all the donations are going directly to Direct Relief, which is going to be helping in the affected areas that need the help the most. And that's going to be happening this coming weekend, I believe Friday to Sunday. So it'll be happening then. They have been taking submissions for speed runs, so it's going to be very, very quickly put together. But GDQ has done this multiple times in the past. Unfortunately, they've gotten pretty good at it because I remember like Hurricane Harvey, like 5 years ago, they did something like this. And then, you know, when the world shut down, they did some of that to benefit the Red Cross. So they're going to be doing that next weekend. And that is a good organization to donate to because they could use the funds and the money. And Tackle says, yes, there is another one, Hurricane Milton, coming from the Gulf of Mexico. That hurricane wants their stapler back. So please, please bring their stapler back. Hurricane Kirk is like just hanging out in the Atlantic Ocean, and it's not going to make landfall. But it's an official hurricane. It got a name, and it's Hurricane Kirk. So, let's talk about some gaming stuff and things that are going on in the gaming industry, or even the greater industry, because one of the things that I talk about on the show a lot is VR and AR, or mixed reality, or XR, which is extended reality devices. I don't know what we're calling it now. But I actually got asked at an event that I went to last week by somebody, and they asked me, what do you think of VR? And they didn't know me. They knew I was a video game podcaster, but they didn't know that I had done a lot on VR. And they're like, do you think it's ever going to take off? And I actually answered no, because I think if it would have taken off, it would have taken off by now. And I think it's missed its chance. And it turns out Microsoft, I guess, kind of agrees. Microsoft went more with the augmented reality route, and they are now exiting that. So The Verge reports that Microsoft has ended production of its HoloLens 2 headset with no sign of a replacement ahead. In an email sent to The Verge, Microsoft Cloud Communications General Manager Craig Cincotta, I'm probably not pronouncing that right, I apologize, writes, quote, Microsoft is no longer producing Microsoft HoloLens 2, and we have signaled a last time to buy for customers and partners. Support for HoloLens 2, including security updates, will end on December 31st, 2027. We will continue to invest in mixed reality opportunities with first-party software solutions and services, partnering with the broader mobile phone and mixed reality hardware ecosystem. In addition, we remain fully committed to the IVAS program with the U.S. Department of Defense, unquote. So, HoloLens is not a gaming device. It was touted as a gaming device when everybody first saw it, because you could play Minecraft in it, and they had all those demos. And then there were definitely some games on the original HoloLens. I do have a HoloLens one. I haven't turned it on in years. I'd have to charge it up, and it most likely still works. But it was not touted as a great gaming device. It was touted, and where it was finding its niche was in business software and enterprise software, and like on a shop floor, on a factory floor, things like that. That's where it really found its footing. It's just, it was expensive, and there weren't enough use cases for it. It never really got that killer app that people were looking for. It was an answer without a question, which is what I believe VR is as well. VR is an answer, and we never found the right question for it, and I fear it's too late to find that question. And if we want to take this back to games, what I told the person is, you know, Beat Saber is a game that you can only play in VR. There are no other games that I can think of that only work with that game design in VR. Every other game, you can translate it to a monitor with traditional either controller or keyboard and mouse and traditional stuff like that, and it would essentially be the same game. Beat Saber is the one game that you can think of, that I can think of at least, that you can't. It is not something that you can do on a monitor. You would have to change the game so... You have to change the game design so much, it would be a different game. That's why I don't know if we're ever going to find the right question to get the quote-unquote mass adoption of VR that we were all promised in 2018 with the Oculus Quest. And I remember talking with somebody that was a big VR content creator. And they thought that, now this was 2018, so they thought by 2020 or 2021, they didn't know what was going to happen in the world in 2020, but they were like, in 2 to 3 years, nobody's going to play a game on a monitor anymore. Everybody's going to be playing games only in VR. Monitor gaming is going to be dead. They call it pancake gaming is what they called it. And pancake gaming is going to be dead, and nobody's going to play it anymore. And I was like, no, that's not the case. And they were like, you are stupid if you think that's not the case. And look, here we are. So, Microsoft exiting this is not a surprise to me. They were trying to go for the augmented reality stuff, and they couldn't find all the right questions to warrant it actually being something that they focus on. It was not something that was good to their core business, which is really, Microsoft's core business is actually like server infrastructure, like Azure for data storage, or IIS for web services, and Microsoft SQL Server for database. That's their core service, not a lot of this technology like this. and they are increasingly going more out to hardware partners, and they're like, we will provide the software, but we're not going to do the hardware anymore. Now, Respicled, I believe is how you say it. You've been here a lot, and so I should know how to say your name. Pass-through VR will get better than real life. There's no limit to those optics. Your eyes are only so good, which is true. And OG Happy Dude says, VR AR exclusives like Resident Evil 4 being on a device a normal gamer doesn't care about, like Meta, just shocks the hell out of me that they haven't found a way to get it to the broader VR market, PSVR. I mean, Resident Evil's on PSVR too. Like, it's there. Or there is a Resident Evil. I think Village or something. Like, I think Village is on PSVR 2. But they do have those games on PSVR 2, but there's not as much of an install base. So the issue with things like Resident Evil, even though they have those versions, A, those are games that were originally made for a monitor. Like, they're not a VR-specific game. But there isn't enough of an install base to do a VR-specific title. There's not enough people out there to invest in something that can be only done with that. And we've been seeing this a lot with other control mechanisms. Like, the Wii, the Nintendo Wii, actually did have the install base to have the motion controls because everybody had the Wiimote and the Nunchuck and all that stuff. And what did everybody do that made Wii games? They made it to where you could use the classic controller. And then when Nintendo went to the Switch and they were like, hey, the Joy-Cons can do this motion controller, what did everybody do? Oh, they're making games for just the regular controller and you don't use the motion stuff. So it's also a little bit of a resistance to change, but also the industry and the amount of gamers that are out there are so old, they don't really want to change the way they play either. OG Happy Dude says, to be clear, the OG Resident Evil 4 is a Meta VR exclusive, and I bet what happened is that it didn't sell enough on Meta, so they weren't going to spend the money to port it to something that had a lower install base. Unfortunately, there are more Meta Quests out there than PlayStation VR, and so if it didn't sell well on the Meta Quest, it's definitely not going to sell well on PlayStation VR. So I think it's not that they can't find a way to do it, it's just there's not enough money to do it. So for HoloLens, which was the HoloLens 2, the HoloLens 1 was marketed as something that possibly could be a consumer device. It never was. They had development kits. It cost $3,000 to get one of those development kits. I paid that $3,000 many, many years ago. Never made anything with it. I was going to, but I never did. And they then changed to do the HoloLens 2, which had some different capabilities. They discontinued all the software for the HoloLens 1, so I don't even think I can get stuff to work for the HoloLens 1 anymore, unfortunately. I think now it's a $3,000 paperweight at this point. It does turn on, but I don't think I can actually get anything to work with it anymore. And the HoloLens 2 was made specifically for businesses. So they were like, it's not a gaming machine. You're not going to play Minecraft on it. It's not going to be available to consumers ever. They were very, very upfront. They're like, this is for our enterprise customers. And I don't mean Star Trek. I mean big business. So, but support for that, software support for the original HoloLens headset will end on December 10th. So that's actually the original one that I have. So, like, I guess there is still software for it. Software that's written for HoloLens 2 does not work on HoloLens 1. Software written for HoloLens 1, I do not believe, work on HoloLens 2. Microsoft originally unveiled the HoloLens headset in 2015, promising the augmented reality goggles would power the future of virtual worlds. No. Microsoft then followed up with the HoloLens 2 in 2019 with a wider field of view, eye tracking, and more powerful specs. That was the thing about the HoloLens 1, is that the actual hologram was like this really tiny box in the center of your vision, and that was it. And so it really didn't have a good field of view, and that's why people didn't embrace it. People that weren't in the space, people like it, business people, weren't really embracing it because, like, it's this really tiny part of your vision. HoloLens 2 fixed that. I never did actually use a HoloLens 2, so I don't know how much wider of a field of view it was. Microsoft's struggles with HoloLens had been apparent over the past 2 years. Former HoloLens boss Alex Kipman departed the company in 2022 following misconduct allegations. Microsoft then changed its hardware portfolio in January of 2023 amid layoffs that impacted its devices teams. Employees on the HoloLens 2 team were also impacted by additional Microsoft layoffs earlier this year. It's not clear if we will ever see another HoloLens headset that will be available for businesses or even consumers to buy. It was never available for consumers. It was always just businesses. Microsoft reportedly scrapped plans for HoloLens 3, but then hinted that it would make a meaningful update to the hardware when the time was right. Microsoft has now teamed up with Andural Industries, the military tech company started by Oculus VR founder Palmer Luckey, to improve its IVAS mixed reality headsets used by the U.S. Army. Microsoft's initial IVAS headset based on HoloLens technology first went into trials in 2021 and includes integrated thermal and night vision imaging sensors in a heads-up display. The U.S. Army previously said it plans to spend up to $21.9 billion over the next 10-year IVAS project contract, and Microsoft has been working to correct issues with its IVAS headset in recent years, with further tests scheduled for early 2025. Yes, I actually remember, like, something came out about those early tests, and it was like, you can't use these at night, because the way that, if you look at somebody wearing a HoloLens, you can actually see the little hologram in front of their eyes. So when you're at night and trying to, you know, not be seen, the IVAS device using the HoloLens technology, you can see the light in their eyes because it's the hologram. Fifth Dream says, I would get a good AR/VR headset if I knew I could fully replace a monitor or a TV with it. And I guess that depends on what you define fully replace with, because there are plenty of devices, like even my Valve Index, I can basically put my monitor on in my screen and I don't need to use the monitor anymore. I can just have it in my device and look at it that way and manipulate it that way, either using the base Steam VR tools or there's virtual desktop and things like that. So I even believe that the PlayStation VR does the same thing. So PlayStation VR and PlayStation VR 2, you can play your regular games in it, and it just puts it on a big screen in front of you. And it's like you're watching it on a big screen, and then if you got the headphones with the binaural audio, the 3D audio, then you're going to be able to get that. So it is possible to replace that stuff with it. It's just, does it do enough for what you are looking for? And the answer is probably no. Fifth Dream says, I haven't had one in a while. I just remember it being lowish res, and the view was a little small. I guess I'd need a newer model. Yes. The distance between the pixels and the resolution that they can have has greatly, greatly gone up, especially with the PlayStation VR 2 being available on PCs, but also, you know, Apple Vision Pro, even though it's $3,500. The display in the Apple Vision Pro is a $3,500. It's what you'd expect for $3,500. The 2 minutes that I've used an Apple Vision Pro prove that to me. And ZenMonkey11 does say Quest 3 and 2 is better. You can use the virtual desktop in AR. And Repcycled says, smart stereoscopic thermal night vision goggles, that'd be handy for military ops. And that's what I think Microsoft's working with, and they're going to be using Palmer Luckey's company, which is more of a military company, instead of Microsoft doing it in-house, and they're just going to support them with software, which is probably a much better business decision for Microsoft, to be perfectly honest. That is their strong suit. Hardware has never really been Microsoft's strong suit, and that includes Xbox. The Xbox hardware was never the strong suit of Microsoft. And you can ask anybody who had a Red Ring of Death of Xbox 360s how that went. So Microsoft is now officially out of the mixed reality game. They had the Windows mixed reality headset. They discontinued that already. This was the last thing. This was the one that was not consumer-facing. It was people-facing. So now I think the onus is going to be on the VR developers that are still in the game to make that pass-through VR that we talked about earlier, which is, instead of AR augmenting your vision, VR would just have cameras that show the outside world to you, which is a little bit different than augmented reality, but it brings in the same feeling, and you can probably do more with the environment that way. And ZenMonkey11 says, in Quest 2, the cameras are black and white. Quest 3, it's in color. so you can actually get color. And Apple Vision Pro, to be fair, also is a colored version of your environment, and it looks really good when you're in it. And I think that's where we're going to start seeing these type of apps, because as a software developer, not in games, it's always been augmented reality that people that have employed me or clients have been more excited about, because they don't like the idea of losing the vision of all of the stuff around them when they're trying to do things at work, be it like, you know, looking at charts, big data, or looking at, you know, things that are around them. They want to be able to see the world around them and just have data on top of it. And that's a lot of the stuff that I was working on when I would work on mixed reality projects at work. It wouldn't be VR stuff where they're, you know, now no longer in their space. That is not what they're looking for. That's what gamers are looking for. That's what consumers are looking for. But that's not what business people in the office are looking for. So it's now going to be up to the VR devices that can do the AR, where you can see through you, through the headset, and you can see what's around you and actually see your actual environment, like what the Quest 3 does, like what Apple Vision Pro does, to kind of carry that market, because it's not going to be HoloLens. So in the gaming industry, we talked last week about Ubisoft and how there is an activist investor who owns 1% of Ubisoft. It's a publicly shared company. 1%, and they're like, Ubisoft, you need to sell. We need to get this away from the Guillemot family. We need new leadership. We need this stuff. And 10% of the stakeholders, the shareholders, agree with me. And that was what we talked about last week. And they're like, we've got some private equity firms that we're going to line up. The activist investor said this. We've got some private equity firms, and we want you to sell to them, take it private, or you know, basically have them take over the company. And Ubisoft is actually listening, but not actually the direction the activist investor initially said. So this week, CNBC reports that shares of French video game publisher Ubisoft surged more than 30% on Friday after a media report that Tencent and the firm's founding Guillemot family are considering a potential buyout of the company. Bloomberg News reported Friday that Tencent and the Guillemot family, which are both minority shareholders of Ubisoft, are considering a buyout among other options after the company lost more than half of its market value this year. One possibility currently being discussed is a combination of Tencent and the Guillemot family partnering up to take the company private, the business news agency reported, citing people familiar with the matter. Shares of Ubisoft spiked 33.5% by the market close on Friday following publication of the report. Ubisoft declined to comment on the Bloomberg News report. Tencent was not immediately available for comment when contacted by CNBC Friday. Of course they weren't. The European gaming giant, which is most known for Assassin's Creed, has been in a state of uncertainty lately amid investor concerns over its lackluster AAA games pipeline and the overall management of the company. Last week, Ubisoft said it was postponing the release of the next title in its popular game series, Assassin's Creed Shadows, by 3 months to February 14th, 2025, after softer-than-expected demand for the firm's Star Wars Outlaws game, which launched in August. Ubisoft also cut its net bookings guidance for its 2025 fiscal year to about 1.95 billion euros. Remember, they're in France. Below the 2.32 billion euros Ubisoft reported for its 2024 fiscal year. Speculation over a potential takeover comes as Ubisoft shares are trading at decade lows. So last week, what we talked about, AJ Investments, an activist investor with less than 1% stake, said it amassed the support of 10% of Ubisoft's shareholder base to push for changes at the company. In that open letter, the private equity firm said it engaged industry experts as potential replacements for the current Ubisoft management to realize a turnaround strategy at Ubisoft. It called for Ubisoft to sell itself to private equity groups. Now, this CNBC article says, or Tencent. I don't remember hearing Tencent being said in anything that I read last week, but maybe I missed it. Tencent is the big Chinese mega corporation that has like owns like half the game or owns stake in like half the game industry. Epic Games has Tencent as part of their ownership group, not majority owner, but they're in their ownership group. And there are plenty of other companies that are like, oh, they're, you know, 5% or 10% is owned by Tencent. Tencent's everywhere in the gaming industry, even if you don't realize it. Following Ubisoft's guidance cut and a performance in the second quarter that fell short of the expectations, CEO Yves Guillemot announced that the firm's executive committee would launch a review to further improve execution. So James Loiker, technology research analyst at UK investment bank Peel Hunt, told CNBC earlier this week that the part of the problem is for game publishers today is that us, the gamers, are devoting more of our time to older games than to newer titles. AJ Investments actually talked about this a little bit as well, but this analyst says, quote, "More choice plus a cost of living squeezed wallet has meant consumers' cash has been spread more thinly, leading to revenues and ROIs, which is return on investment, of those games often coming out below expectations," unquote. Basically, and what AJ Investments said last week is that Ubisoft spent too much money and time making games based on new IP or licensed IP that had not been proven in the market. And instead, Ubisoft should instead only be making games for established IP that gamers love. Remakes, remasters. Don't make a new game that nobody's ever heard of. Remake the first Assassin's Creed. Remaster the first Assassin's Creed. Don't do, you know, licensed IP for things that gamers have not historically bought or maybe never bought before. Instead, do more Harry Potter stuff. I don't know. That's what the guidance has been, which is terrible as a consumer, but remember, we're not part of the process here. Or it's terrible for us, the people that watch this show. Now, have you seen how many people have been buying that Silent Hill 2 remake? Have you seen how many people are excited about that? There's something to it. And as much as we're like, oh, every game is a remake, every game is a remaster, every movie is a remake, every movie, they're remaking my childhood. Yeah, that's what makes money. That's what we as a collective we are all buying. Money is talking. Zemmonk11 says, "I would be pro Ubisoft if they took off that awful DRM. That's the only reason I don't buy their games anymore. I think my last Ubisoft game was that ski game." And that's they have a whole bunch of DRM on all their stuff. Because I had gotten The Crew 2 when it was $1. And yeah, there's like three different DRM things that come up whenever I load it up. And yeah, I probably shouldn't if I was, you know, I shouldn't have installed any of that on my computer. I don't know if it's any of it's running right now. I'm not that smart to know exactly how it gets all its tendrils into things and what registry things it hooks into. But yeah, that's because they've perceived that as a problem when I don't think that's actually their problem. I don't think piracy is much of a problem for Ubisoft as Ubisoft thinks piracy is a problem. Questbuster says, "Ubisoft spent too much on chasing trends with awful results. Hyperscape attempted to break into the Battle Royale scene a few years ago, and they killed it after 2 years because no one wanted it." Ubisoft may become a private company, but it may be a private company owned by Tencent in China. And then we'll see what happens there. Michigan says, "I feel like with movies, they're running out or have run out of movies, thus remaking movies like Labyrinth. As far as games, I'm confused because every time they make it for another system, isn't that the same as a remake versus remaster, or am I misunderstanding it all?" So, it's a very good question. Very, very good question. The way that I understand it and the way that I interpret it is for the second half of your question, remake versus remaster. A remaster is we are taking the game and we are putting in better textures. We're putting in some quality of life things, but ultimately it is still the original game. Like, I'm going to use Kingdom Hearts as an example. And it's a bad example because they lost the source code to the original Kingdom Hearts, so they had to rebuild it. But they still rebuilt it with all the original voice lines. They had, got as much as they could of like a lot of the original stuff, and they didn't remake, they didn't have to redo a lot of work. But it was, let's make it work on modern consoles. Let's make it work on modern screens. Let's have higher definition textures. That's a remaster. And I think it's a term that comes from music. So in music, let's say a band records a song and they have what's called the master tapes. And the master tapes have each person's individual recording, right? And then what they do is they take from those masters, they mix it, and then they put it out on an album. And when you hear like a music album getting remastered, what they've done is they've taken those original single tracks, like here's just the drummer, here's just the singer, here's just the guitar, and it's their raw audio that they had recorded, and they remaster it by upping the quality on those specifically and then recutting the track and putting everything together again from all of the original source material. So that's what a remaster is. A remake is something like, we are going to retell this story, but we're going to tell it in our own way. And this is what the Final Fantasy VII remake is. It's not a remaster of Final Fantasy VII. It is it is retelling the story of Final Fantasy VII with a twist and with their own take on it and changing a lot of things. Whereas a remaster is, it's the same thing that you saw before. It just looks prettier and runs better on modern hardware. A remake is, we are going to be doing more. We're changing things up. It's not going to be exactly the same thing you remember. And that is the difference between a remake and a remaster in my mind, and that's how I use it. Some other people will use them interchangeably, but I do not consider them to be interchangeable. And Dark Tessia says, similar to Link's Awakening, I think. Yes, I would consider Link's Awakening more of a remake on the modern system. It's taking a lot from the original, but it's not just remastering the Game Boy version. Now, as for movies, they're running out of ideas is partially true because every story's already been told somewhere. It's just now we have to frame it differently. And that's been a problem with writing for a while. Like every story's already been told at least once. You may have never heard the original story, but every story's been told at least once. And you can, when somebody talks about like even like Star Wars, like, oh, that was an original story. No, it wasn't. It was an Akira Kurosawa story from like 5 years earlier. Same story. So every story's been told, it's just you put your own spin on it, even though it is the same story. And so that movies have been running into, but what they're doing now is with movies is they don't want to risk you not wanting to go see a movie that's not an established part of your childhood. So they're going to remake they're going to make another Beetlejuice. They didn't remake Beetlejuice. It was a sequel. But instead of making a new comedy horror movie with a new character, they're like, no, we're going to use what everybody likes because that's got instant, we don't have to do much marketing for that. And ZenMonkey11 says they're also scared to take risk on new ideas. They just want to work with what they think works. And that's the crux of things right now. Art, to make good art, you must take risks. The best art is risky. They take risks. To run a great business, you need to minimize the risk. The great MBAs that run companies, what they do is they minimize the risk. So when you have MBAs and other business people now in charge of the art, their goal is to minimize the amount of risk in the art, which is why doing Beetlejuice was not very risky. It minimized the risk because it was already an established, beloved, nostalgic character that people have been wanting to see more of for 30 years. And that was purely a business decision because that is less risky than trying to do another comedy horror with a new character. Questor says, from what I've seen of the Silent Hill 2 remake, it's currently overwhelmingly positive on Steam from people that purchased the deluxe version for early access, because Bloober Team stuck the landing by staying with the original while managing to improve it with quality of life and added content. And that's the way a remake, that's the way a lot of people want a remake to be done. Now, Final Fantasy VII is not that kind of remake, and that's why a lot of people don't like it as much, is because they didn't really stick to the original. And I apologize if I'm spoiling Final Fantasy II remake or Final Fantasy VII remake and Rebirth, but Final Fantasy VII remake is about as much of a remake of the original Final Fantasy VII as the 2009 J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie is a remake of the original series from 1963 and stuff like that. So if you've seen the J.J. Abrams Star Trek and you know how it remade and how it ingratiated itself in the entire Star Trek lore, the big plot point about how it fits in, that's what Final Fantasy VII Remake did, and that's why a lot of people don't like it. A lot of other people loved it. But Silent Hill 2 Remake, they're not doing that. And that's why a lot of people a lot more people are very receptive to it. It's because it is the same story. They didn't really change the story. They're just adding to a little some color to the story. But fundamentally, it's still the same story. And Final Fantasy VII Remake is fundamentally not the same story as Final Fantasy VII. Zemmonkey11 says, Twitch and YouTube Me Movie Studios, we need a second wave of indie films like we had in the late 90s and early 2000s. We're actually getting that. The movie studio you're looking for is called A24. And they are like the one studio that I can think of that's taking a lot of these risks. That is the studio that gave us Everything Everywhere All at Once, by the way, is A24. And they're also behind the other kind of big movie that you might have heard about or seen is Civil War, which is about photojournalists during the second U.S. Civil War. That's also an A24 film. If you look up A24, they are basically your indie art house risk-taking darlings right now. And I believe if you're looking for which streaming service has A24, I believe it's Max is the one that has all the A24 films on it. But Everything Everywhere All at Once was kind of their big one that really blew a lot of people away. So let's talk about the last story. It's more about, you know, who wants to own companies. And this one is not going to be as happy as, or maybe, I don't know. I don't know. It might be better than Tencent owning Ubisoft, and it might not. But Video Games Chronicle reports that Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund is considering a move to increase its stake in Nintendo. That's according to a new interview in which the firm discussed the Saudi Arabia Public Investment Fund's plan for growth. Prince Faisal bin Bandar bin Sultan Al Saud, which I probably did not pronounce, I apologize for that, the group's vice chair said in an interview with Kyoto News that, quote, there are always opportunities, unquote, for further investment. Quote, it's important to keep the communication going so you can get in there the right way. We don't want to rush into anything, unquote. So this is a news story about an interview that somebody had made, an off-the-cuff comment. But it is interesting because they kind of slipped into Nintendo when nobody was looking, not even Nintendo. So the PIF is involved in sports, theme parks, film, video games, and other entertainment mediums. The PIF was one of the main bodies behind the Esports World Cup, which took place in Saudi Arabia earlier this year. If you watch professional wrestling, the PIF is also involved in that, which is why you see a bunch of stuff happening over in Saudi Arabia. The fund first acquired a 5.01% stake in Nintendo in May of 2022. As of 2024, the fund now owns 8.58% of Nintendo. Nintendo has previously claimed that when the PIF bought its initial stake in the company, it was unaware of the transaction and first learned about the Saudi investment from news reports. See, when you're a publicly traded company, they just bought those shares from other people that had shares of Nintendo. They didn't buy them directly from Nintendo, and they're like, ha ha, hi, I'm here. What's up? The PIF, which has made a series of investments in the video game industry in recent years, is reportedly central to Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's goal of making the Saudi economy less reliant on proceeds from oil. In December of 2020, the fund acquired over $3 billion worth of stock in Call of Duty maker Activision Blizzard, FIFA publisher Electronic Arts, and Rockstar's parent company Take-Two. So this is Saudi Arabia being like, we can't live on this oil money forever. And they want to make it so, and they also probably say, you know, they rightly have a bad reputation. And I don't want to, it's out of the scope of this podcast to discuss that bad reputation, but they have one and they know it. And the way to combat that is to diversify and make it seem like you're not such a bad guy, even though it can be argued that they are still bad guys. But that is what they're trying to do, and that's why they're investing in sports leagues, and they're investing in professional wrestling, and that's why they're investing in video games, and that's why they're investing in a lot of these things, because then they can try to cultivate this positive view of Saudi Arabia, which may work on people who are not in, you know, who are not terminally online or terminally following the news. And that's what they're going to be doing by owning a little bit of Nintendo. Because as we've noticed with like sports leagues and with professional wrestling, the more that you get, the more that you own in something, the more you can get favorable coverage of you or favorable depictions of you. And that's really what they're going for. They're going for the hearts and minds, because there's a lot of stuff that they can't win on, especially with hearts and minds. So if they are able to get into these things and get into places where people are enjoying things and be like, hey, you know, we're not so bad, people might believe them. Now, are they buying more of Nintendo? Not right now. They are basically like, we'll buy anything. Like, we'll put our stake in anything. We'll determine what's best as time goes on. So this is really, it was an article that was brought on our Discord, and it came from Video Games Chronicle, which is a site I really do like. But it really is like an offhanded comment in a podcast interview, essentially. And that doesn't mean that they have an intention of increasing their investment in the short term. It's just something they're looking at some point. We are going to take a quick music break, and then we'll talk to Rob and Orange Lounge Radio and see what they're going to be talking about tonight. But we're going to do another spooky music break for those of us who are here live. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show and the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
If you want some cake, listen to the Bobby Black Wolf Show.
There you go. That's a spooky bumper for you. That was Ellen McLean, who was the voice of GLaDOS. She actually did that, and I got a 7-day free trial of AutoTune software, and allowed me to remake the GLaDOS voice. So yes, Ellen McLean does sound like GLaDOS. You just got to auto-tune her, and then it's exactly GLaDOS. And she did that bumper. So if you want to leave a bumper, all you got to do is send me either an MP3 of just your voice or a video of just you and your voice welcoming people back to the Bobby Blackwell Show. I will choose which DMCA violation I will risk behind it, and then put it back here on the show. So I'm going to check to see if the green room has anybody in it. Probably not. I haven't taken callers in a long time. I always leave this area for callers, but then I'm like, I talk too much. I like talking about things too much, and we have some great conversations in chat that I like to talk about. So coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California, who talk about games for much, much longer than I do, and we like to check in with them and see what's going on in their neck of the woods. And so we like to check in. And Sacramento, are you there?
Hi, I'm here, Bobby. How are you?
I am doing well. So I have to ask you, because you've been playing with something this past week. Uh-huh. And I want to get your take on it, because I've heard of it. It's a service, an online service that I have heard of, mm-hmm. that you discovered recently. And I never told you about it, so I can't, you know, don't blame me. You never asked. But retro achievements.
Yeah.
You actually got back into streaming some stuff, and you started doing some retro achievements.
Yeah, that's a rabbit hole. I fell down hard.
Yeah. So tell me about this rabbit hole.
Okay, so, well, here was the thing, is I was trying to look for, like, I need, like, some incentive to get back into streaming. It's been a couple months, and my streaming was really erratic, and I was like, you know what, I've just had this real itch to, like, play retro games lately, and I was like, what if I could, like, maybe, like, record myself going through and beating old games? You know, not all the old games are beatable, but, you know, I really had an itch to play the OG Zelda. You know, while everybody's talking about, you know, the new Echoes game, it was, oh, sure, I'll go back and play the OG Zelda. And I was like, I wish there was a way to, like, maybe have, like, a virtual, you know, because Nintendo doesn't have anything baked into the Switch Online. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't consider myself an achievement person of the night. I don't know the G-rated term for it. Yeah. I don't consider myself that type of achievement finder, but I'm achievement motivated.
Yeah.
Like, I think back to, like, the Atari 2600 days and Activision, and when you used to mail in and get a patch by taking a Polaroid of a high score, which I actually never did, but I wish I did. What a cool thing.
Yeah.
Like, why don't game companies do that anymore? Like, exclusive merchant? Oh, well. Anyway.
It's called Kickstarter. My point is,
I guess. Yeah, except you don't really have to do well in a game to do that. But anyway, I digress. So I was like, well, I'll build, like, a virtual shelf. Maybe there's, like, an iPhone app that you can track.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out, after doing a little digging, I was like, oh, there's this retro achievements website where they've, because of course, modders figured it out.
Yep.
They've gone into emulators, and I realize that emulators are a questionable place, but look, I'm of the mindset where I'm like, if I own The Legend of Zelda, like, five different ways at this point, you know, the classic NES, when I bought it on Game Boy Advance for the classic series, the original, you know, I feel a little justified downloading and playing it in an emulator. Okay. Yeah. So, and what they've done is that they've actually baked in this achievement system that kind of reads the memory as it goes through the emulator. Mm-hmm. So it builds emulators into old Nintendo, old achievements into old Nintendo games.
Yep.
And it's really not just limited to old Nintendo. My goodness, it's baked into just about every classic system. It goes Atari 2600, a lot of, like, even systems you don't hear as much about, like the MSX or the ZX. No, I don't think they have ZX Spectrum yet, but Apple II. All the way up through PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2, because there's a lot of, you know, decent PS1 and PS2 emulators now at this point. The only thing it's missing is Commodore 64. Mm. Apparently, some of the nature of the, you know, because Commodore 64 was really editable in a way, like, it's very easy to kind of, so they're having a problem, from what I understand, they're having a problem locking down the memory for achievements so that the Commodore 64 stuff doesn't get exploited. Same problem with the Amiga. So, thank you for allowing me the free plug. Yes, on my personal channel and on Twitch at Rob Roberts, as well as my YouTube channel, Rob Roberts Plays, I've been accumulating, beating, or playing retro games in a loop that I'm satisfied with. Because the first two that I did, so the very first game I did, which you called correctly,
which I was trying to make a joke, because I thought it was going to be the Guardian Legend. I'm like, oh, it's going to be Balloon Fight or something, like, silly like that. Ha ha ha.
Nope, I really did think Balloon Fight is the good place to start because, and as I explained, it was the game that Iwata programmed, was in the weeds. And I think when you know, look at Nintendo's growth and all that, I think Balloon Fight is a really good starting point for a lot of that discussion. So that's why I started there. We'll get to the Guardian Legend soon enough. It's it's on my, certainly on my to-do list. But, you know, in Balloon Fight, I hadn't played in years. I discovered during that stream, I was like, if you get to a certain point, and I actually read up after the fact, it's because I popped 20 blue balloons in a row, I got to the orange balloons, which I had never seen in Balloon Fight as a kid. I didn't even realize that was a thing.
Wow.
But I considered that beating the game because I got to number one on that leaderboard all these years later. So, because I think the retro achievements have, like, win conditions for games. I think it was, like, get to board 30, which is very impressive, but was not going to happen for me anytime soon. So, good enough.
Yeah, and so one of the, I actually know a couple people that do that have done things not with retro achievements, but, like, I'm going to play every game on the system, and, like, that's going to be my gimmick. And one person I know, he goes by Cartridge Blowers. He is one of the people I've met at GDQ, one GDQ host. And he does, his series is called SNES in Excess. And he uses Excel, or he actually uses Google Sheets, but not Excel. And that's how he tracks. But he will basically say what he does, because he's in the speedrun community kind of tangentially like I am, is that he will look at like the speedrun leaderboard, and he won't try to speedrun it, but he will use that as the win condition. And then he will play every game, and he's like, every 50 games is a long JRPG, every 10 games is a sports game, and he wants to go through all of the US release super officially released Super Nintendo games, and I think he's at like 500 something. So he's almost to the end, but he's been doing this for years and years and years and years, and that's how he's done it.
Yeah, you know, whatever incentive system works for you, right?
Yeah.
And like, I know Dark Tetsuya, I see him on Blue Sky posting quite often. I think there's like a guy going through all the Famicom Disk System games, doing a very similar thing on YouTube. So I think it's a logical path to go down. But like, considering I have no YouTube following, I'm actually very pleased. Like the Zelda video I just posted on Friday, which is like 4.5 hours long, and I'm not good at it, already has like 35 views.
Nice.
And so I'm like, considering I don't really do anything, I'm like, wow, that's, I'm very happy with that, to be honest. It's a place to start anyway. Yeah. So, that's a new,
and
that's
so
a new thing I found.
When are we getting you into crowd control? Because that's the real fun. I sent you this link
last week.
I don't know if you had a chance to click on it or look at it.
I didn't review it in depth because I'm not looking for that right now, the crowd to be able. But never say never. Like if I actually stick with this thing, which I feel oddly motivated to do, I think what you're going to see happen too is that I'll do more of the shorter things like Pinbot and Balloon Fight. I will probably do that off stream and put them straight on YouTube, and then do some of the longer plays like Guardian Legend coming up and a couple other games I have in mind on stream. So that way, you know, because the short ones, I don't know if they're as exciting when it's live streamed. But at some point, when I get to a certain point where I'm like, okay, I want to do Zelda again, but I want to do it with a twist or whatever the game is. I don't know what all is compatible. Yeah, the crowd control thing sounds funny.
And for people who don't know what crowd control is a service that hooks into games new and old. They do actually have some retro games that they hook into, but also a lot of newer titles that they hook into, and then they hook into Twitch. And they will hook in, and essentially the way I've seen it most, and I have not also not really looked into it, is if you put in enough bits, so it's also a money raising thing for people on that are affiliates and higher, you can actually get points in crowd control with bits. You buy points, and then you can actually affect the person playing. Either you can help them or you can hinder them. And so most times people try to troll the person. It's like, oh, no, now your controls are reversed for 5 seconds or 10 seconds. And I paid 50 bits.
Oh, that is very similar. I've seen a Dead by Daylight thing.
Yeah.
That's that, basically. And, yeah.
And maybe, Dead by Daylight being an online, online game, that's a little bit. Yeah.
Darksiders is Dixpert. That was the name of that. Yeah, okay. That's exactly what that is, basically.
So crowd control is probably just another variation of that, but I know some people that are kind of involved with it, which is why it's the first one that comes to mind. They've done actually some crowd control streams on GDQ, where it's like mess with the speedrunner and see if they can still beat the game after you're, messing with them. But it's also like replenish their health. Somebody can pay, 20 bits to replenish your health in the game or whatever. And so that's what crowd control does. It's like a randomizer, but chat's your randomizer instead of a seed.
I will say one other thing I'm kind of stewing on and looking for feedback if this is interesting at all. So obviously the folks got to watch me struggle through the original Zelda. Like I did beat it. It took me 4.5 hours. And retro achievements will also track how long it took you from when you started playing the game to how long you hit the win condition, which was beating it, saving Zelda. It was about 4.5 hours it took me. I mean, granted, I had a dinner break, et cetera, but about that long to do it. And, I really struggled on level 9. I could not remember where the silver arrow and this stuff was. Chat eventually kind of nudged me. And I don't mind a little backseating when it's a friendly little nudge.
Yeah.
I think Dark Tetsuya went, did you try the room to the north? And I was like, oh, and that's all I need, right?
Yeah.
So now I've gone through it in struggle. I'm really tempted to go through it again on Friday, but do the Famicom version with the altered sound. And otherwise, it's pretty much the same game. And see how much I upskilled from a week before. I don't know. I think it might be interesting.
And then, Rob, we can have you install a program called LiveSplit. And you can have a timer on the left side of the screen.
Yes.
And then you can actually track how long it takes you to get through each level.
Mm-hmm. 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 Coming soon. Maybe this is a first step. I don't know if OG Zelda would be the game I'd want to speed run, but maybe.
It's an easy one to get into.
I love OG Zelda. Yeah. So, but actually, the question I'm getting from Shane is randomizers win. Yep. That's the other big randomizers win.
Yeah. Because, like, especially, you know, Pokemon randomizers are huge, and, you know, there's a button.
Well,
like,
he can stream that. Yeah.
Randomizer that I was interested in the most, and I even installed it and kind of figured it, like, out how to get it to work, and even with the tracker, is the one for Final Fantasy VI, which is called Worlds Collide. Mm. And basically what you do with a randomizer is you have... Legally, we will say you have burned your own copy of the ROM from your cartridge of Final Fantasy VI that you legally obtained. Mm-hmm. And then you would run this on it, and it would essentially be kind of a mod for the cartridge. It would patch the cartridge with a random seed, and like, or like, you have it be a random seed, or you can set all these conditions, like who is in your party and stuff. But then it takes all the item chests and it puts random things in the items. And then they're like, beat Kefka. It's you have to go and you do all these quote unquote checks. That's the term that they use to get certain things and get certain conditions. And you're trying to go and beat Kefka. And so it removes removes all the story out of it. So it's definitely a skill challenge for it. But I started going into it and I realized I really need to actually like play through and beat Final Fantasy VI now, because you need to know where everything is.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, go to this town. I'm like, I don't know where that town is, but you don't have a map or anything. It just assumes you know where that is.
I will shout out one other randomizer I thought was very interesting, and maybe this going down this whole path will make me want to try it again, mm-hmm. was the one that mixed Zelda and OG Metroid, where you would go into dungeons and then you'd suddenly be in Metroid and you go to different... I thought that was such a neat concept, but I had a very hard time getting that ROM up and running for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But, That might be something down the road. We'll see. Before or after crowd control, we'll see.
There's another one, just to kind of also complete the loop here. There's another thing called Archipelago. Sure.
Uh-huh.
And what Archipelago does is it has two people, the way that I kind of understand it, the very little bit that I understand it. It's like, let's say you've had, you've got like two teams of two, but it's really, let's say you have two people. One person is playing one game, one person is playing another game, but your items are shared. So, like, let's say one person is playing Metroid and one person is playing Zelda, the boomerang may be in Metroid. And once Samus gets the boomerang, then Link gets the boomerang.
Oh, that sounds fun as hell.
So.
Oh, I want to do that.
And so, yeah.
Bobby, either you or Sakura or somebody's got to play that with me. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, I've seen some races for that in some other, like, speedrun marathons where people are playing and they're talking to each other and they're like, okay, I'm going to go here to see if I can find what's there. And that way you can clear your game.
Interesting. Okay. I love that.
So we haven't talked anything about gaming news. What's going on Orange Lounge Radio tonight?
All right. Well, we'll talk a little bit about why are people skipping the Xbox? Why do developers not want to develop for Xbox? Microsoft's asking the questions, and we'll talk about maybe some of the answers they're getting this tonight. And also contributed from the Discord server, we had a question about or another study. And this is one of those things that's very obvious, but why do gaming companies keep leaning into it? As it turns out, most people prefer playing single player games. How about that?
What?
How about that? So why do they keep making multiplayer games? We'll talk about that and much more coming up.
All right. Orange Lounge Radio is coming up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us and interact with the show directly. You can also find me on social media at BobbyBlackWolf.com on Blue Sky. Or at Bobby Black Wolf, other places, but really, it's join Blue Sky. Come on. I mean, please. I'd like more friends on Blue Sky. So at BobbyBlackWolf.com over on Blue Sky. And join me there. But if for this show, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. This show is not for everybody, but maybe for somebody who does not know about it yet. And we will be back next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us And maybe I'll have played played more of Metaphor ReFantazio, because that comes out this week. That the new game from the Persona people that is getting that it really has an interesting concept premise. There's a 4-hour demo. I played 1 hour. And I'm like, I'm gonna wait for the full game to come out. I don't need to play anymore. But maybe I'll have played that a little bit by next week. I'm gonna hit the button. There we go. Have a happy gaming. Enjoy the games that are coming out. Some good ones are coming out here in October. And I'll see you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.